Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well. Good to be back. Well, this week I thought we'd talk. It was all the news. Earlier this week was this release of JFK files that occurred. I think it was last week, October 26th, that it occurred. And,
yep.
Here we had basically a release of 2,200 documents. With 300 documents remaining withheld for national security reasons. I wonder why. It doesn't seem to make any sense. There's been a lot of talk about what's in there. What I've read, there isn't anything new, just some interesting things in there. It's interesting because Donald Trump is said to authorize the release, but based on the law, is actually, if not for Donald Trump's intervention, all the documents would have been released. So actually, within this law, there's a huge withholding of documents that's going unreported. Of course, the interesting question here is if indeed Lee Harvey Oswald was a lone nut assassin who got off a couple of lucky shots, miraculous shots, and killed the 35th president of the United States in Dallas, Texas on November 22nd, 1963, if he was indeed acting alone, why are they withholding the documents? Why did they withhold the documents? Revision was decided for 75 years, and then because of Oliver Stone's movie in 1991, they sped it up. You had the Records Review Board created. But again, if he was a lone nut, why all those documents and why all the national security concerns? You know, that's the obvious question.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's because it wasn't a lone nut. I mean, there are so many versions or theories about who killed JFK, right? There's just a dozen, kind of mainstream, and there's even more fringe. My favorite one is that Jackie shot him, and if you've ever seen the video, it's a little bit ham-handed, but you can kind of see it, Jackie pulled out a handgun and shot him in the head. She pulled his head into her lap and then blew his brains out. So what's the public to do? Well, it's like I say, the only thing we know about where we are, it's not where we think it is. There's just no way to go through any of this and to get an understanding of anything other than the Oswald theory is very, very weak. Cover-up was done. The cover-up was very Masonic. Earl Warren, Mason, I think Dulles was actually on the committee, which is just totally ludicrous. So it was a cover up, tip to stern. Kennedy was if he was killed, because that's one of the theories, is that he wasn't. It would have been done because he'd run afoul of the deep state. We'll point out to some behavior. There's three things. He was going to not do the Vietnam War, which they really liked, wanted to make a lot of money on. He was going to get rid of the Federal Reserve. He had exposed the secret society with his speech, right? The secret society speech where he talks about this group that take oaths. Obviously, he's talking about the Masons. And actually, there was four, because he didn't do what Dulles had wanted him to do in terms of the Bay of Pigs. So those four,
and he fired Dulles, or sacked Dulles,
and he sacked Dulles, right?
And Cabell, which his brother was the mayor of Dallas.
So those are given as the deep state reasons and the different theories, but
There's also the supposed Zionist connection too.
Actually, I didn't mention. I should have. There was that he was not going to give Israel the nuclear bomb, or he was opposed to it.
He was pressuring them on signing the non-proliferation treaty.
Right. And, there was that. But in general, you can see in all these, you've got, the idea that the deep state is unknown, right? We don't, they can say, well, the Bush family killed him, or, organized crime or whatever, working with, army, CIA, whatever. But this is just one mystery being replaced with another, and so it's the Kennedy assassination is, in my mind, is only useful because it's a way to help wake people up to the fact that the deep state is basically, when they use that expression, they're talking about a secret society. The secret society is evil and is murderous. JFK's murder is one example. 9/11 would be another. But, I can see no possible way, Tim, that the assassination of Kennedy and the 9/11 operation would not come from the same secret organization. So that, I think, is one, kind of logical plank that we can use. What do you think about that? Does that seem ring true to you?
Because obviously the crime went unpunished and undiscovered. So that criminal network that comprises was within the secret society that's running the deep state for the various interests you mentioned, whether it's criminal, corporate, these things. And ultimately it goes back to, corporate, the financial interests that were behind things like the Cold War. And the ultimate objective of the Cold War is some sort of traumatizing, dividing the world in order to create dialectics to achieve an outcome. Problem, reaction, solution, thesis, antithesis, synthesis, these things. It's very Masonic, as you say. Obviously something with Kennedy, the Kennedy assassin. Well, one thing that's interesting is is just what we know obviously blows the official narrative out of the water. We have all these evidence of Lee Harvey Oswald knowing Jack Rubinstein, prior to the assassination, his father connections to organized crime in New Orleans. We have all the huge body of evidence that shows that Lee Harvey Oswald was an intelligence asset, either CIA, ONI, FBI, or all three, for that matter, because this type of game really is a hall of mirrors. So this is what's being played here, and the idea that this guy did it for attention. Well, he declared his innocence when he said, "I'm a patsy," and no one seems to think about this stuff. And all of a sudden, all the witnesses, the death of Dorothy Kilgallen, this journalist that said she was going to break the story wide open, had interviewed Jack Ruby, and her sudden suicide, that many other witnesses in the years just after the assassination. 40 or 50 people dying, early. It's absurd. You have these strange characters like Oswald was being helped by this guy, squired around town by this guy George de Morenshield, who knows George Bush. George de Morenshield is this white Russian emigre who had all types of connections to the oil industry, the banking world, and also he would go into Latin America, places like Haiti, and get intelligence. Make business contacts, and he'd be briefed by the CIA. And this guy is like 50 years old, and he's good friends with this 24-year-old ex-Marine. All of a sudden, he turns him over to Ruth and Michael Payne, who also have connections, very closely connected, ultimately to Alan Dulles. So you just look at these things. No, it's obviously this is an area that should be investigated, and it wasn't. In fact, Alan Dulles, actually, you mentioned him being on the. I think he was the executive director of the Warren Commission. He conducted some of the questioning, and he actually interviewed Ruth Payne about her involvement with Lee Harvey Oswald. Nowhere is it mentioned that Ruth Payne's mother was very good friends with this, was it Bancroft, who was the mistress of Alan Dulles. one of the mistresses of Fred Allen Dulles. And, you know, they're driving Marina back from Virginia to New Orleans. And all of a sudden they're helping her out. George De Morin show just leaves the scene in the summer, late summer 63. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, he gets caught up in this assassination. He gets blamed for the assassination. Questions like, I don't know, he happens to get a job at the building along the route that this presidential, you know, that the president takes if, a month after he gets a job at the Texas book depository, the one building with an empty sixth floor.
Right.
You know, just, I mean, come on. I mean,
it's completely lunar.
You know, it just, just look at that. So, but it, yeah. Your point about, yeah, the obviously the significance of the assassination, this isn't just one event. It didn't take out one president, and the government, you know, maintained its cohesiveness because we had this succession. Lyndon Johnson took office, and yeah, it was the people have called it a coup. It was maybe a final coup in the American government being taken over. We have the strange anomaly where Johnson is sworn in office on Air Force One when he doesn't have to, because you know, when you're vice president, you already take your oath. So if you're to take office because the president is incapacitated or killed, you don't have to take the oath. Yet he wants the optics of this swearing in with Jackie Kennedy right by his side, wearing the bloody, you know, I guess she changed quickly, I'm not sure, but she's wearing, standing next to him. Everyone's that famous photograph on the airplane where Johnson's being sworn in. So it just doesn't seem to make any sense, these things.
Well, it makes sense if it's a dramatic presentation.
Exactly. Words, yeah.
If it's all done for theater, and I always, you know, I've always wondered about that, the Jackie business. You know, they've got her, and she's there, and that, I hate to say it, but I don't trust Jackie. I don't. I'd like to, but the problem is that her behavior is just strikes me as so fake.
Well, it's strange. I mean, I mentioned George De Morinchild. George De Morinchild. He, of course, he is close. He's very closely associated with Lee Harvey Oswald. He's squaring around town, driving him to the dentist, getting him jobs, getting him apartments to live in. Okay, this is the assassin of John F. Kennedy, according to the official narrative. George De Morinchild also was good friends with the Bouvier family. He held Jackie on his knee when she was a little girl.
Yeah, see, so this this is very troubling. I mean,
very troubling.
Because you have to wonder, well, you know, how deep is the deep state? I think that, you know, the way I look at it is, they wanted the picture of LBJ being sworn in basically as a psychological device, right? Mm-hmm. Just so the nation would accept him as president.
Yes.
You know, because like you say, he didn't have to. He was all the Constitution gave him the power of the presidency. Yes. As soon as Tennessee died. Mm-hmm. That's in the oath that he took. He didn't need to have the swearing in. That's all just theater. And then the idea that you would have Jackie, who, let's face it, is a bit of a fashion fuss budget, okay about taking a picture with her husband's blood all over her dress?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Tim. I think that this is more likely she's part of the, you know, the theater of the absurd.
And supposedly they scrubbed the limousine clean. Secret Service did.
Well, sure.
You know, that's a crime scene. Then they steal the body out of Parkland Hospital.
Yeah, well, the rest of that stuff just gets ridiculous. You know?
I mean, it's like
the body disappears, and you know, I mean, yeah, the whole so I mean, as an operation, it was pretty. It seems to me pretty clumsy, you know, but again, it just goes back to my point that we can see it as an operation.
Mm-hmm.
And we can be very suspicious about certain, you know, obviously Dulles and the Bush family and all this stuff. But, you know, we aren't really any closer now than we were, you know, in 60 years ago, as far as uncovering the deep state. I mean, if we are, it's only just barely because of the recent research by, you know, internet researchers like the Intrepid Duo, Tim and Joe, that is kind of inching this forward a bit. But in fact, the deep state is certainly something that the general public is no closer to understanding than they were at the time. And so, you know, I would say that part of the operation, the obfuscation, right, of people's ability to think about it, has been very successful. You see what I mean? I mean, that part of it has been, you know, even though everything else came out, even though, you know, like everyone knows that somebody killed Kennedy, but that wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald. But I don't really see any kind of mounting energy in the public to basically hold the government accountable or the deep state. And I don't see, energy of, that is different from the energy that's being created by the internet research into, the secret society. I just don't see much that the Kennedy, the whole business really didn't lead to much. I know Sean Stone, he's Oliver's son, and mm-hmm. I did an interview with him, a couple interviews with him I've done, and I asked him, I said, well, what was the point of all of the stuff that Oliver did? Where what did it lead to? And there wasn't any, nothing really ever came of it. You have if you see the film, you've got a very good exposure of, back and to the left. It's very clear that Kennedy is being shot by from the front, mm-hmm. right? Okay, where's the response? If you bring out this information, it seems to me you have a moral responsibility to make sure that there is some action upon it, right? And I don't see any of that from Oliver Stone or from fans of the movie. I just see it. This kind of reminds me of, I hate to say it, but of the Vietnam War series that we interviewed, mm-hmm. where all of this stuff comes out in a certain way. It's never quite clear. It's always drips and drabs. And all it really ever does is vent emotion rather than enable it to be focused. So, now we have another little blurb of information, right, that Trump has brought out, and as you say, there's supposed to be another little lump that's back there, and I'm sure that'll come out, and there'll be a few things which are tantalizing, but nothing clear. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think just getting gamed here. I think this whole thing is just they manage our emotions very, very well, and that's really what we've been exposed to, is very sophisticated psychologists and anthropologists who've taken the Kennedy assassination, and their techniques are hard to really understand. Like, I think it's quite possible that Oliver Stone's movie was part of it, that it was a way to basically reveal that the Oswald story was fake, but with enough confusion around it, right, that no one would really demand, or try to basically depose the government.
Yeah, because, it blames the military-industrial complex and CIA.
Yeah, like that, right, exactly.
But you can't indict the military-industrial complex. You can't arrest them and put them in jail, right? I mean, it's... It's like almost like disembodied evil spirits that are controlling things. Well, no, they're flesh and blood men took decisions. There are people that pulled the trigger and these things. So men did it. It has a demoralizing, confusing effect. And this is all part of the revelation of the method, I guess, where they can look what we can do. We can be obvious about it. And no one in authority will do their duty and investigate it properly. In fact, it will be covered up. Blatantly.
Exactly. Yeah. Well said. That's kind of what I was trying to say. Is that basically what they're doing is they're just, by the revelation of the method is being given to us in a form that there's just enough to deplete emotion over time, right? Because, like you say, you walk away and you go, wow, the military or the mafia, they're the ones who did it. Well, so what? What? How does that help any kind of, the military? What is that? What military? Who? How does that relate to the current power structure? The current power structure, which is where we should be looking, is never brought into the picture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I mean, this is kind of a digression, but, you know, like recently you and I have been talking about the Irish potato famine,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think it's a really important subject, and we're going to talk about it in the future. But what's relative to the Kennedy thing is that the Irish potato famine was a deliberate genocide by the British Masons of the Irish. And now it is being covered up by the current Irish political regime.
Mm-hmm.
Just flat out being covered up. They're lying to the Irish people. And so, you know, to date, the information about the Masonic genocide of the Irish hasn't triggered a rebellion. Not yet. And obviously the Kennedy, in my opinion, the Kennedy assassination is being managed the same way. In other words, it's with these drips and drabs, and, you know, they give you a little here and take a little there, and you never quite can get the emotion up to do anything. But I hope that with the internet now, you know, moving forward, that at some point we'll get to a more critical mass. You know what I mean? Where, and the Kennedy thing might be part of it, but I doubt it. I just don't think that at this point there's enough emotion. I mean, you know, if 9/11 couldn't trigger rebellion, then I would say that the idea that the Kennedy assassination has any hope in doing it is just not a serious idea. What needs to happen is that there has to be accumulation of all of this information that's coming out, that in and of itself, that the accumulation of all of this data and the certainty that the future is genocide, that will trigger some behavior changes in the population.
Yeah.
Because to me, what I think, you know, we're about is trying to change people's behavior. We've got to stop just accepting the clever genocides against us, right? They're very clever. You look at the Irish potato famine and then how they, you know, the cover story. You look at the Vietnam War. You look at the 9/11. I mean, you look at all of these ways that they use to depopulate us. The sum total of all that gives you the awareness of the future. We know where we're headed, brother.
Mm-hmm.
We're off a cliff here. We won't exist as a people. So where is the threshold of enough information and data about the past, about what has been done to us, and enough certainty, right, of where we're going in the future to trigger the population, a large fraction, just going to hell with it. We've got to act. We have to act. We just can't sit there in the cocktail parties and say nothing while people just, you know, wander around drinking Chardonnay and you know, and talking about how much they hate Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the big thing is challenging the mythology and fairy tales that we've been given as history. And that's part of the thing is exposing these what's been called straight state crimes against democracy. You know, that's one of the things, sort of an academic approach to these things. You mentioned there were a few officials that tried. I mean, I think Garrison perhaps was a good faith effort. I haven't heard any reason why. I think he actually intended, of course, he was shut down or his investigation was stymied. He brought it to trial, wasn't able to get a conviction on Clayshaw because he wasn't able to get the cooperation he needed to convict Clayshaw. But, of course, he went after Clayshaw because he originally was going after David Ferry. But he died suddenly, another witness dying suddenly. And what he was trying to do was kind of climb up the ladder, and which is what prosecutors often do in these cases, to get at the higher-ups, pulling on a string, so to speak. And so that's an example of one official. But then it goes with the Garrison investigation and prosecution against Clay Shaw, you get all types of evidence of interference by the CIA and by the FBI, which is totally illegitimate, which exposes, again, another sign of a cover-up. You got to address that issue if you're going to support the official narrative. It just doesn't make any sense. But you raise a good point when you talked about the free Masonic aspect of this all. Michael Hoffman, of course, has written about this in his Psychological Warfare book. He mentions Cuomo sees the Kennedy assassination as a ritual. The assassination of JFK is sort of the cult ritual of the classic killing of the king. And this is designed to have certain esoteric effects, so the destruction of authority, the smashing of matter to bring in the new order. And he points out that Dallas, Texas, the murder occurred in the 33rd parallel, Dealey Plaza. And Dealey Plaza was also home of the first Masonic temple in Dallas. And you have the three tramps, which are like the three unworthies, or what are their names again? That symbolize.
I took a different. I mean, I thought it's sort of like to me, it's like, well, why did they call the site that they blew up the atomic bomb Trinity?
Yes. Also,
Oppenheimer, Oppenheimer goes, I'll be the destroyer of worlds.
That was also in the 33rd degree parallel.
And that was also a 33, and then here they march out the three tramps. I think that's just a representation of the Trinity. They're just ridiculing. And that's why I also think that, like, three buildings collapsed. The two towers and, mm-hmm. and the seven, I think that's also just a Masonic sense of humor, basically about destroying the Christian world, and particularly the Trinity. I think these guys, this would go into, my theories on the origin of what they think the origins of Christianity are, which basically you can read in my book, Caesar's Messiah, about, how this group would look at, the Trinity as a representation of the role of the Caesars who mm-hmm. fought against the Jews in the first century. And so, now the Freemasons are basically this organization, hidden throughout time, but now it's coming forward. And it's when you get this kind of humor, when they parade the three tramps. And it was, in my mind, it was just, if you ever seen pictures of that, it was very theatrical.
Yes.
It was just absurd. And incidentally, just a few bonbons about that. They were paraded by two policemen and taken into the sheriff's department, which is something that's completely, non-protocol. They should never have been taken to the sheriff's department. They're not even, the bureaucracies don't even link up or intersect. Mm-hmm. So there was something weird about that.
Yeah.
And I just thought, well, that's probably, they're just, they're tramps, right? It's a way of, here's the Trinity. We're just showing you. And then with the Kennedy, you talk about, it's a 33 parallel, execution. What I also thought was amusing, and this may have been kind of an after the fact sense of humor, is that the Beatles played on Ed Sullivan 77 days after the assassination.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wondered if that was deliberate or not, because that would be keeping in kind of the Masonic sense of humor about things, about, well.
Did you know the CBS Morning News did an interview of the Beatles, the morning of JFK's assassination?
No, did they?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. November 22nd, 1963, the CBS Morning News did a Morning News on the Beatles, which were just gaining traction at that point.
Fascinating.
So it's quite...
Well, I mean, the organizers of the whole thing would know that the Beatles would be first step toward the cultural shattering, right?
Well, yeah, it's sort of an alchemical ritual murder going on here, and you're going to have this bloodletting, this trauma to this, sort of this introduction into savage times with this bloodletting on national television, this brutal murder of the president, an almost beheading of the president, in a sense, which also has sort of ritualistic importance, significance there, because his head is blown off.
I thought it, to me it was... they killed Kennedy, and then they bring in the peace and love Beatles to bring in the peace and love era to produce the hippie, and then, make people easy to enslave in that way. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, pacifism. Mm-hmm.
But the deed itself has a revolutionary act.
Absolutely.
And you have all this ushers in this era of assassination. You have Kennedy 63, Malcolm X 65. You have 68. You have Martin Luther King and Robert F. Kennedy, and what they symbolize in these and so you have all this violence. Of course, this is also coinciding with, of course, the terrific, horrific violence called the Vietnam War. And I think we've talked about, and I've talked with others, how that itself was planned to sort of traumatize society, create this generational gap that was being promoted not only by war, the trauma of war, but also the trauma of popular culture. And, of course, the Beatles play a big, important role in that. They're opening up the culture to this type of music, cacophonous rock music. It's gradual, of course. If you listen to Beatles music in 1965, it's very good music. It's very entertaining. It's melodic. It's purposely created for that purpose. But then the music gets harsher and harsher. Of course, now popular culture has degraded to such an extent today that it's almost unrecognizable. You know, it's difficult to call it music for the most part. What's marketed as popular music. And it's all part of this degradation. It's all part of this reverse alchemy that perhaps the assassination, this was sort of the real objective of the assassination, wasn't just to get the Israel off the hook with the Kennedy administration or to guarantee the expansion of the Vietnam War, but it was maybe to traumatize society and create the 60s. The 60s wouldn't have been the 60s without this killing. And it set the stage for the next decade, you know. So
yeah, absolutely. That's exactly how I see it. I think that when they assassinated Kennedy, that was a tipping point. Just like 9/11 led to the NSA. You know, I mean, think about all the things that they had prepared with 9/11. Right? It's just this whole litany of ratcheting up of the slave state, the Middle East wars. So all this was obviously planned, and with the Kennedy assassination, I just see it as exactly the same. They just had a whole litany of stuff, and the peace and drug revolution culture was certainly part of it. Yeah,
yeah, and you have to have the sort of this war because that would delegitimize, adults in the eyes of the youth, And you create this, of course, you create the divide because that adult generation had come of age during the Second World War in Korea, where if you were a good American, you just marched off to war. You saluted and marched off to war and did your duty. So all of a sudden you have this generation that's not doing that or isn't enthusiastic about doing it, and that creates division between the two generations. Of course, in the years leading up to, you have all these war movies, this heroic portrayal of the Second World War. these things, and we've talked about, of course, you have the developing of the drug culture via Time Life and the entertainment, and sex too. So you have sex and violence, and you have the assassination is obviously violent, but the wars are violent, and you have the introduction of sex. At the same time, you have the civil rights movement that's being promoted, it's really, There was a large sexual element to it, the civil rights movement. If you look at the civil rights leaders like Huey Newton, they were very sexual, and that was done to threaten people, you know.
Yeah, I mean it's like Cinque raping Patty Hearst.
They wanted to, which
I, in my opinion, was a theatrical event. Mm-hmm. They wanted to promote integration. They wanted to basically do everything they could to traumatize European culture, and in the show we did on the Vietnam series, Ken Burns' Vietnam series, I was really happy we were able to point out that MK Ultra, which is sort of basically the operational arm against American culture of the CIA, it ran both of the operations. It ran the Vietnam War and the hippie culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea that the two of them were distinct is just the false dialectic. In other words, they were, the American youth that was a soldier was going to be ground down psychologically, by the sex, drugs, and rock and roll culture when he came back from the war, traumatized by the Phoenix program and all of the atrocities in the war that he was going to be experiencing. So it was all, you have to kind of think more chessboard like with these guys, because they have control over everything basically, and so the Kennedy assassination was a trigger in my mind.
Yes,
and
it
was designed to traumatize. And basically following it, the nation really, you know, wasn't able to do things that, that they should have done. Like one, do a proper investigation. I mean, the idea that Alan Dulles was on the committee is just beyond belief. I mean, the whoever was in the Congress was not dirty and permitted that was a coward, because obviously Dulles and Kennedy had a huge falling out, and the idea of him sitting on Kennedy's tribunal to determine, you know, who had killed him is just preposterous. It makes no sense. So. So something, you know, democracy was not operational at that point, you know.
There's an interesting, the soldier-hippie divide. You remember the TV show Taxi?
Yeah.
Yeah, a very funny TV show. And there's a scene in it where Jim Nitowski, who plays a burnout drug character, was talking to, what's his name, the boxer character.
Jimmy LaMotta, whatever his name
is. But, yeah, but any. Tony Banta, this is the character's name. And Tony was supposed to, this shows how old the show is. He was a Vietnam veteran. You know, this is 1979, 1980. And he goes, he's going off on this thing talking about his experience as a soldier. And he says, "Well, you were back here taking drugs, partying up, listening to Beatles music. I was up to my my waist in the rice paddies fighting the Viet Cong for this country. What do you have to say to that?" And Jim goes, "Well, thanks." Thanks. But that shows that divide there. You know, even but yeah. So it's again, it's the whole idea of the killing itself, and if I can find the quote here. Michael Hoffman. He goes right in psychological warfare. Secret societies and psychological warfare, alchemy of ritual murder. He goes, "What ought to be unambiguous to any student of mass psychology is the almost immediate decline of American people in the wake of the shocking televised slaughter. There are many indicators of the transformation. Within a year, America had largely switched from soft-toned, naturally colored cotton clothing to garish-colored artificial polyesters. Popular music became louder, faster, more cacophonous. Drugs appeared for the first time outside the bohemian subculture ghettos. In the mainstream, extremes of every kind came into fashion. Revolution in cognition and behavior were on the horizon, from the Beatles to Charles Manson, from free love to LSD. The killers were not caught. The Warren Commission was a whitewash. There was a sense that men who ordered the assassination were grinning somewhere over cocktails. And out of this, a nearly psychedelic wonder seized the American population. An awesome shiver before the realization that whoever could kill a president of the United States in broad daylight and get away with it could get away with anything."
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think that you know, you can... and these are difficult things to talk about, because really what we're describing are very sophisticated and successful mind control operations against the public. And this stuff is sophisticated. In other words, the way they are manipulating us, man, it shows a very, very deep understanding of how to control culture, how to basically, because you can see, you know, when he talks about how the clothing, right? I mean, think about planning something like this, mm-hmm. right? So we're really into very, very sophisticated psychological control. And, you know, unfortunately, we can't even decode it. It's that sophisticated. I mean, that's just the bottom line. Tim, I get asked about this stuff, you know, I'm sure you do all the time. And I always say, you know, a lot of the stuff we it's like the Kennedy assassination itself. We know it was, you know, not what we've been told. We know it was an assassination. We know that it's the deep state. You know, it's not the mafia. It's not the CIA. It's not, it's all of those things. You see, it's the cooperation between all of them that's in play here. But when you think about the sophistication that would then roll forward from the assassination in terms of, now they've traumatized our culture, so now they can start with things like the Vietnam War, the hippie culture, right? All of these things were, of course, planned well, way, way, way in advance. And see, even that kind of shows that when you think about it, the idea that Kennedy had these reasons for being assassinated. See, I don't buy this. You know, I ran through them at the beginning of the show, but I take a different. I hate to say it, but having studied these guys for so long, I take the position that Kennedy was set up for the assassination before he was elected. You know, they wanted to traumatize the nation with this individual. They wanted to kill him. He was the reason he was assassinated is because he was an attractive looking European Catholic
and youthful.
And youthful, and that, and the reason, so he wasn't, Kennedy wasn't assassinated for any of those other reasons. I mean, in my opinion, I just, those things could all easily be controlled by the deep state. You know,
well, the whole Camelot imagery, which is promoted by the corporate media.
Exactly. Yeah. So the reason, I mean, and I'm going to bring up the Irish potato famine as a, you know, an active genocidal operation with lifetime actors like the Masonic cesspool PM Mary Robinson covering the thing up today as we're sitting here having our delightful conversation. That Masonic cesspool is basically overseeing a government that is lying through its teeth about what happened to try to keep the people from rebelling. So that, you know, ongoing operation has the murdering of Catholics. Catholics are especially, you know, desirable sacrifice for this organization, right? There's something there. And that's why, in my opinion, that's really like, why did Kennedy get assassinated? Because he was Catholic. And that's why he was elected, too. I think the elections are fake. I think they bring this guy in. He's just their sacrificial goat. And, you know, they bring him to the 33rd parallel, and then they kill him, and then here comes the Beatles, and here comes rock and roll, here comes the Vietnam War. But
In 62 to 65, which is what you have, 64, you have the birth control pill introduced.
Yep.
You have Vatican II, 62 through 65, I think. And Kennedy, yeah, in order to, you have to have Kennedy in place for these things, just the imagery of it all.
Sure.
Nixon wouldn't have worked.
It wouldn't. No, of course. If they'd killed Nixon, the nation wouldn't have been traumatized. No. They would have had a party because he was unlikable. See, he was set up because of his looks and because of his Catholicism. He was the the hero of the European. Well, and when you slaughter him like that in public, which they didn't have to do, of course, they could have killed him anywhere they wanted. Then you've done something deliberately traumatic.
And Catholics had arrived with Kennedy, and that was the whole point of, I guess, seducing the large American Catholic population into becoming Americans first, as opposed to being Catholics, which was a big. I mean, if you do the research on this, that was the sort of the a lot of anxiety among the WASP establishment, or the large sort of this unruly, ungovernable or uncontrollable Catholic population in the ethnic neighborhoods, and. This is sort of like the capstone event of the destruction of the destruction of the Catholic identity. Of course, this also falls along with creation of suburbia and the psychological warfare involved in that. Because once you get them out of the ethnic neighborhoods in the suburbia, they just become white American consumers, which are easily controllable because they're controlled by their appetites and consumerism. So they're manageable. Point is, when you talk about how this had to be planned out a long time, people have no. You do the research, you realize that the oligarchs hire the people to do this stuff for them, to do the research, to hire the magicians, hire the conjurers, so to speak, hire the ethnographers, the sociologists, the social scientists. They have all resources they need to study us over several decades. And that's what your research and Jan Erva's research, other people's research regarding the Radio Research Project and the War of the Worlds, mass communication. Of course, the manufacturing the deadhead. This is a decade before the Summer of Love. Time Life is promoting the drug culture, psychedelic drugs. And of course, we know with the George Hunter White and Operation Midnight Climax and his involvement with the CIA, testing LSD on population, then expanding to mass dosing that you needed to do with these with rock music, facilitated this because that you get the rock festivals, these mass events, you know, where people break down there. This is all goes back to Wilhelm Reich in the America, and in the idea that you create mass events where people lose their inhibitions, and they do things they wouldn't ordinarily do, and that's why they had these things. And you needed the music. You had this huge expansion of the college population because of the baby boom and all these things right after the Second World War, this first boom in the late 40s. At the same time, you had this incredible expansion of the university system via courtesy of the taxpayer of the United States. Who's filling all these positions? All the cultural Marxists. And they're hiring all their friends, and they're infesting universities, spreading all these poisonous ideas to this college-educated youth. So, yeah, it's well thought out. And if you do the research, I mean, it's traceable. The documents are there. You know, the connections are there. The relationships are there. You could draw a schematic the same way a prosecutor would draw a schematic. Exactly. Organized crime, make his case. We can do this with the New World Order. It's just he's called a prosecutor. We're called conspiracy theorists if we do it.
Right. Yeah, but, I mean, it's like we in the one show we talked about, you know, the – someone who looks at the world as basically as an analyst for a government intelligence service would automatically assume that these individuals that are influencing culture are, you know, have in back of them some political perspective that's putting them in place. In other words, someone like that wouldn't have any trouble with the concept of a lifetime actor. Because bear in mind that all of the people in these intelligence service who are in the field are spooks.
Yeah,
they all have fake identities.
Do they have legends or sheep dipped?
Exactly. So the idea that like Gordon Wasson or the Grateful Dead or people like this or even the Beatles would not be, you know, spooks, would not have a, you know, an operational personality. I mean, maybe they wouldn't have one. But that wouldn't be the first thought that an analyst would have.
Yeah, yeah.
He or she would go, we have to study this person as an asset, as part of an operation. And why? Because they influence culture in a destructive manner.
Mm-hmm.
That led to a – so when you destroy, you then are suspicious. And so that's why, you know, they would look at these people, try to trace the connections back. They would try to see – you know, who do they know? What are the connections? You know, and so when you do that, just like you outlined a few seconds ago, you come up with a very, very clear, virtually a schematic. You can go all the way from Gregor Lukacs in, you know, the Hungarian Soviet in 1919 with, you know, taking the kids to, you know, who are in elementary school to sexual debauchery class. And then in the afternoon, taking them to a fairy tale camp where they learn how to be animals and lose their human identity. I mean, you can go straight from there to Woodstock and then right into the Cardassians. I mean, it's just there is just no question, but they are using culture. You know, they have weaponized our culture. They are taking us step by step to a brave new world where we don't exist any longer. Our descendants are not even really related to us emotionally or spiritually because they are just the product of, you know, the state. Mm-hmm. They're going to be created by the state. I mean, Huxley's book is not a warning. It's just a blueprint, a way of crowing about the triumph that they're going to, you know, have over the European, where they create the delta and the beta. And that's why you have this weaponized integration and weaponized, you know, they're promoting so much the mixed race marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And where does this go? This goes to basically the Brave New World. And, you know, we were talking before the show and I said, I wish that people would exchange the concept multiculturalism, which is a euphemism for the correct concept, which is easy to enslave. If they would just have the right concept to describe the phenomena, it would help their thinking.
Yeah, because you're atomized and you have nothing.
You're atomized. You're isolated. Yeah. You are just a sitting duck for such a well-organized operation as is against us. And so, you know, we do have the capacity now to lay out the schematic. And this is, you know, Tim, everyone involved in the alternative media, in my opinion, has a responsibility. We all hate each other, typically. There's so much animosity. You know, there's always, you know, everyone is accusing everyone of being a disinfo agent, or this person is not sincere, or, you know, there's religious divisions and all sorts.
So any disagreement is perceived as being you're a shill for somebody.
You're a shill, right, of course.
And by the way, some very well could be, because we do have cognitive infiltration.
No doubt. Absolutely. In fact, I always, like Alex Jones, I've always thought he's a shill, because I could go into that, but I mean, I don't even. But my point is this: who cares?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, big deal. If the information the shill is bringing out is useful, use it.
Yeah.
If the shill lies or does something which takes it people sideways, then call them on it. But we can't just sit and disintegrate into like petty fighting among ourselves. We're trying to develop a large scale movement. Mm-hmm. How do we do it? Well, I mean, the first thing we've got to do is live up to a single responsibility, which is just to show the schematic to people. That's really what we got to do, Tim. Mm-hmm. We just got to go the Kennedy assassination, it plugs in this way. The counterculture, it plugs in this way. The destruction of the ethnic communities in the 50s, you see what I mean? There's really nothing, because if we can create a clear enough schematic so that a large fraction of the population gets it, then we can have rebellion. And if we can't do it, we're not going to do it. And so that, in my mind, is what we have to move toward. And that's what I mean, even though, like in our show, we're a little chaotic, I'd say, you know, from time to time. But overall, we are headed in that direction. Overall, everything that we've done in our this is a 24th show, I believe, is perfect to the best we can come up with, to reveal the real history, typically behind things which are, you know, it's not given, but how it all plugs into the whole system. You see what I mean? That's really what we're trying to do here, is we're trying to show people that there is a whole system of mind control and of genocide that's going on right now. And when you have enough data, you can kind of get a really vivid understanding of what your life is really all about, where you really are in this process. And at a certain point, like we talked about earlier, you know, where the schematic is clear enough and the future is clear enough, hopefully the result will be courage. You know, change your behavior.
Yeah, yeah. And it's difficult because, again, it goes against everything we've been told.
Well, everything we've been socialized.
The good example, you mentioned, you bring up this whole idea of pushing mixed marriages or mixed coupling. Yeah. The immediate reaction to that is, what, are you a racist?
Yeah, right.
You have to think of multi-tiered, multi-level, what they're doing here. First of all, is the problem with mixed, when you say black-white, well, the problem with that is whiteness itself is a denatured, you know, deracinated concept. American, you know, what is white culture? Is it a little broad, a little vague? Is there a white ethnicity? It's not a white ethnicity. And, you know, I'm Irish Catholic. Do I want to identify with white British people?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what unity is there? I mean, the only unity is there.
What's important about this is the fundamental dialectic that is used against us is the white-black dialectic.
Yeah. Which is very what? Which
get,
is what?
They get people who are
very Freemasonic, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm a black person, even though even there, there's all hundreds of ethnicities.
Yes, yeah.
And then you say, and white, there's white privilege, really white privilege.
Yeah.
How did the Irish potato genocide reflect white privilege? Mm-hmm. How did the slaughter of the Irish youth that were brought over here because there's nothing to eat over there and were put into the Union Army and then put at the head of the troops marching into automatic weapon fire? Is that white privilege? You see, there's all kinds of nuance that are being missed when you've got things like, you know, Black Lives Matter fighting against the Ku Klux Klan and people identifying with both sides, you know, and so that's part of the schematic. That's part of what we have to show the public, is that the dialectics that are in the media, they're weapons. This isn't real. You're in a dream world if you're like a black person thinking, gee, the white privilege. You know, they've got these things now where they're trying to show examples of like white privilege in action. You know, they have the different kinds of YouTube videos, which, you know, they have like a three-legged race where, you know, one person can't run because he's hobbled. I mean, it's just these absurd, you know, and so the problem is that this takes you away from trying to identify who is in control. Yes, the people could be seen as white, but no, they aren't. They don't share a vast white identity whereby they are trying to promote white interests, right?
Yeah, we're not getting invited to the party.
Yeah, we surely are not. And so that's the point, is that if you come to the point where the black-white dialectic is significant, you're already so confused you can't make any progress. Mm-hmm. Because you're not going to be looking for the nuance, you know, society is hidden and it isn't going to, you know, you're not going to use the white black dialectic as a path to get an understanding of like, well, why did they kill JFK? You know, that isn't going to happen. So you've got to go beyond that. You have to start looking at the schematic. We've got to use the data that now is coming forward in the internet, to build out the schematic so that it's basically right in the face of everybody, you know. And I know we're going to talk about the Irish potato genocide in a future show, but I just wanted to mention that they're doing a really good job there of bringing out the truth about the genocide and organizing it. So now the Irish people are coming alert. I think the Irish are way ahead of the U.S. as you know, understanding their genocide as opposed to people in the U.S. I think they have got maybe because it's a smaller, you know, area, but they're doing a good job. But I, you know, I'm hoping that if the Irish genocide becomes just, you know, accepted by the population, that they can rebel, and that this could be, you know, like the beginning of what I will call, I'm going to create a phrase, the Green Spring.
The Green Spring.
You see.
Not funded by George Soros.
So there you go. Yeah, not funded by George Soros. Right. So there you see. There you'd have a real revolution.
Now, how would a rebellion manifest itself?
In Ireland?
Yeah.
Just with street demonstrations that basically turned violent and overwhelmed the political class with bloodshed. How's that for a concept? Like the French Revolution, except without Freemasons. And it's going to be tough for them to keep control. You know, like I know they're really good at when the rebellion starts at controlling it, you know, and having it attack itself. But I think that there would be, you know, there's going to be a lot of skepticism, and a lot of the leaders, like Mary Robinson, I think when it hits the fan, I think what'll happen is they'll just leave. Now, the idea that the rest of the New World Order is just going to let Ireland rebel and set up a nation state, you know, freedom, it's a little far-fetched. But if information is at the same time, you know, just flooding out into the youth of the people who are being wiped out, then the intimidation that keeps basically slave state America functioning will start to shatter.
Yeah.
And you could have rebellion here. And you see, like I once said, you know, if you could get 5% of the people pissed off and to the point where they're past the intimidation, in 60 days, you'd have half the population, because the control is really very skin deep. It's very, very thin. It's just intimidation. You go to a party, you know, someone says something, some person likes Trump, some person likes Hillary. You want to like dump wine over both of their heads,
yeah.
But you don't do anything. You just kind of say, yeah, fine. You know, I hate that Trump or I hate that Hillary, you know, just you go along with it. But, you know, what if the people who knew the truth weren't intimidated? You couldn't have a cocktail party. You see what I mean? America would simply stop they would be, you know, and then once that happened, then the truth would be just this overwhelming force, I think. Now, maybe I'm optimistic. So what? I think, you know, we can hope for this and try to drive for it. And look, what do we got to lose, Tim? You know, what do we got to lose? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So the future is a zero. So, you know, we need to be honest and just get the schematic out. We, you know, like, so, I mean, they're alt media guys. I never argue with people, very rarely. Sometimes I will if there's a point. But what I try to do is just say, look, let's see what we can find between us that is basically we can agree on is useful. And let's just, you know, when we interact with each other, let's just promote that. Because the schematic needs to get built out and it needs to get placed to, you know, in people's minds. And those are the things we got to do. So, support, you know, Jim Kelly. I honestly think, and I think I'm in a position to have a good opinion about this. I think you're like the most knowledgeable person about important history. There's a couple other that would be, I mean, like Michael Jones mm-hmm. would be, you know, there's a few others, but you're really valuable. You're kind of, you have this encyclopedic breadth, you know, of like all of the different things that you've studied. And that is, you know, really valuable resource. So
you know, I stand on the shoulders of people who do a lot of real hard work, real scholars.
But the point is you stand on their shoulders. And believe me, that's one of the most valuable things we got. So keep doing it. And
I'm not intimidated by big books. So
no, and you come up with these great kind of clear understandings. So. See, the point is, like, I think we've actually. It's funny how I don't know how we got here, but the Kennedy assassination is really just a nothing burger. You know, at this point, there's nothing. No one's going to get upset about it, really.
Yeah.
They could reveal that, Jackie killed him and then had sex with LBJ that night, and no one would care.
Well, I mean, look, she got married with Onassis.
Right, with Onassis, you know. So
intel mobulated guy, because that's an old trick. When you kill the guy and you take his wife, right? That's a whole other.
Yeah. You know. But my point is that there's nothing. The emotion is extracted from it, and it was an operation. And what's useful is to plug it into the schematic so that. Okay, well, here's the, and you know, it's like, it's really, it's, this is a very cool thing to do because when you plug in the cultural shaping things and you can see they're all related back into the government operation, you can prove the fact it exists basically, right? You know, when you plug the Beatles into EMI and Elvis mm-hmm. Presley, you know, and into the Masonic Sam Phillips, some records, you know, mm-hmm. when you Elvis Presley's Graceland and you see the logo is a Masonic lodge with the all-seeing eye. That gives you a little bit of a clue, right, about what's going on. And so that's what needs to be done here.
You need the swooning girls at Elvis Presley to have the screaming girls at the Beatles concerts, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It just one step after another. And then from there, you need the Beatles so you can have the Rolling Stones. And then now you're into, you know, just straight pipeline into the rap culture.
And you're creating idols, these celebrity idols. I guess we'll get into this probably later show about the whole cult of celebrity, but this whole idea that mere mortals, that human beings should be trained to idolize other human beings, which is a total disordered relation. If you think about it, I mean, it's like you're disconnecting yourself from reality. There's no one wants to relate to another person in such terms, but then with celebrities, we do. We lust over them or we fantasize about them, and it's just a completely unhealthy way to live your life.
Well, it's always been weaponized. I think the whole music idol thing, I can't even imagine it even existing. I mean, I guess, you know, like Mozart, some of these guys were sort of, you know, wildly popular. I can't imagine anyone swooning over any of
them. You know, I mean, admiring the work of Beethoven, even admiring the music of Lennon, McCartney, or whoever. Else.
Yeah,
I mean, you admire the music that's behind it, but I mean, the idea of you know,
that producing an idol is simply is obviously a weaponized act.
Probably because of the state of technology at the time, you couldn't have a cult of personality created around a Beethoven or a Mozart. This is where technology is a huge function.
This is the point, is that you couldn't do it because they didn't have control. The media wasn't something that they was powerful enough that it could control the minds of the people that it was influencing.
Yeah.
Right. And when the Hays Code was in effect and they were building out the media in the United States, they were developing a weapon, that something that could produce media everywhere.
Oh, the cinema.
the cinema, right. So that you could actually put these fake images in front of people. And then at the same time, you had Edward Bernays creating the first idol, you know, with Caruso.
Yes.
And he was the one who went around and basically promoted him as a personality beyond just the talent of his singing.
How about the story of girls committing suicide because, the silent film star, what was his name? Rudolph Valentino died.
Valentino, now, exactly.
Was that a true story or was that a made-up story?
In my mind, I guarantee it's made up. It's just sort of like the first Beatles swooning can be, you know, shown to have been, with PR events, you know, that were staged.
Then people imitate it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So no one would do it spontaneously, but if you'd show it on, you know, and not, you don't only show it, but show it as orgiastic, right?
Yeah.
In other words, then the people who see this, they go, my God, they're screaming and swooning. I want to do that.
Yeah,
that's where this is where the idea.
Or look at these kids; they're idiots. You know.
Well, hopefully, like if your ego is developed to the point where you can actually have that kind of response, then you're strong and mended. But a lot of people will, you know, they will basically just their behavior will be modeled.
Yeah, I was talking to a couple of my nieces, and they're 14, 15, they just love the Beatles, which relative to, I'm glad that they're into that music more than today's music, because it's a lot less damaging. And I grew up loving the Beatles too, and I still do. I love the music, but I know that what was really behind it. So, but they're just talking about it, and I said, well, you know, all those screaming girls, that was all just staged. So, oh, that's ridiculous. So it's a show. It's show business, right?
Yeah.
Why? I mean, and then, you know, some of the other adults in the room were rather skeptical. I said, yeah, well, they were paid. Some girl school was trekked out there to JFK Airport when the Beatles came in. And the way the cameras were positioned, it made the crowd look bigger. We see this all the time occur at political rallies and commercials and events where the media will make an event look bigger than it is. They do it with riots. They make a riot look bigger than it is. A disruption in a city. To make it look bigger than it is, but I'm saying it's just show business.
It's just like Jackie's bloody dress.
Yeah,
I mean, that thing was all over the world the next day. It was the most, in my opinion, most obviously staged picture in history.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting. You look at the whole thing that through the 50s and 60s, they're building up, and the whole Camelot thing and JFK, and he's just taken out with his head blown off.
Well, he's just being set up to have some psychological, so that his assassination will have the maximum impact.
And you have that play, right, with Richard Harris?
Yeah, well, with Richard Burton, you know, Camelot, you know, and Kennedy, it's actually, I mean, they call it the Camelot era. It's about 1,000 days, 1,000 days of Camelot. But, the video impact, you've got to have the picture of Jackie with the blood and LBJ being kind of, you know, heroically sworn in to have the maximum destructive impact. I mean, to me, that picture leads right to the Beatles because now you're so traumatized. I mean, there's poor Jackie. Her little pillbox hat is all askew and she's got blood.
I was just so amazed when I ran across that CBS Morning News story, the Beatles of November 22nd, 1963. It's the morning show or some morning news program. And you're just talking about this group in England that's catching, and it's getting popular here on the other side of the pond. And I mean, that is just
77 days later, buddy.
Yeah.
They love their numeric symbolism. I mean, you know, he's assassinated on, you know, 1-1-2-2.
Did you think it was interesting that George Bush, H.W. Bush, was it back in the news again the week of the Kennedy release?
Yeah.
With that, him supposedly trying to touch and tell a dirty joke to that actress, Heather Lynn. And
right.
Then her birthday is March 22nd, 3-2-2. George Bush's skull and bones.
Isn't that, Isn't that something?
Yeah. No, I don't know. I had to laugh when I saw it, but it just he's back in the news. Of course, George H.W. Bush has been linked to the Kennedy assassination. You know, by the way, he was in Dallas, Texas, and didn't know where he was, and he's with the CIA.
Well, when I saw Bush hit the news with the Kennedy info dump, I thought it was all just an op. They're just basically, you know, they've got the collective minds all laid out on some computer program, and so they know exactly how to tweak the right psychological buttons to, you know.
Yeah, why now? Why she's also has a twin sister.
Well, yeah, and then also notice you get the sexual scandal with Weinstein, mm-hmm. you know, leading up to the, you know, and Kennedy's sexual debauchery was one of the main storylines, and so.
And Harvey, you know, his name is Harvey.
Well, I'll be darned.
Lee Harvey also.
Lee Harvey Weinstein.
And Lawrence Harvey was a mentoring candidate. And was it Harvey King, or wasn't he apparently charged? King Harvey, what was his name? ZR Rifle, the assassination program of Mongoose. His name was Harvey, too. So Harvey pops up all over the
Harvey
place.
Harvey Osborn. Well, you know, it's just, you know, obviously when you're dealing with like deep state kind of mental apparatus, you know, into us, you can speculate on a wide field, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. I mean, it's hard to prove stuff, but, you know, there's obviously trauma and control being created. And so it's a good idea to do the speculation, incidentally, like that little analysis we just did in the last 60 seconds. This is a good idea, really useful to go through this, and you'd always do it. Because this is how you protect yourself against being programmed.
Yeah, because she's born. Heather Lynn, the actress, was supposedly assaulted by the wheelchair-bound George H.W. Bush, 90-year-old man. She's born March 22nd, 1983, I think. Of course, Skull and Bones, 322, right? And George H.W. Bush is Skull and Bones. So there you go.
Yeah, so there you have it. And then, of course, the idea that she would wait till now to bring out the information is... to me, I just see her as a topless model that's trying to cash in on the, you know, the salacious, you know, stuff, you know, to give her a career boost. We suspect all this stuff. To me, I think it's better to focus on the, you know, on the really the strong cultural influence events. You know, that you can get too far into the weeds with, you know, kind of numerology and stuff like this.
Yeah.
I think, you know, just, you know, how, you know, that's why it's, to me, it's like, rather than look at the dates, look at the pictures, get all of the photographs, because they're the ones, you know, that actually shape the culture, the videos, the radio, and then of course the photographs, look at those, lay all that out. And go through them and see how we got to where we were. And then you can see if there's a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, I think that all this stuff leads up to both the counterculture. Well, basically, it's MK Ultra. I mean, basically, you're going to end up with the Vietnam War and opera in Phoenix, you know, program where there's mm-hmm. going to be atrocities and intellectual moral debasement. You're going to bring back a lot of traumatized soldiers to the U.S. and there is the sex, drugs, and rock and roll culture. So they will, you know, they will basically slide right in and off a cliff when they embrace the culture in their current conditions.
Mm-hmm.
The music, the drugs, the sex. There will be no family production. Like I said, when you went to my 20th high school reunion, the baby boomer. You know, you look at where we should have been in terms of population production, family production. We weren't 1/10. Of where we would have been predicted based on the demographics of our parents. You know, I mean, there was like 500 kids in my class, and I think there was like, you know, they listed the kids. There's like 50 kids or something that had been produced, nothing. So,
yeah, I mean, this isn't like some sort of natural entropic principle. This is engineered decline.
Yeah. Then it's basically all part of genocide.
Yeah.
Just the genocide goes on from many different aspects. It's like the facets of a diamond. So to speak, use an expression, but they're carving in every possible way. But there's all just one goal, which is the brave new world, where they have not just atomized, but they're producing all of the population, and the intellectual energy is carefully controlled by them.
Yeah, and of course, in Brave New World, sex is completely decoupled from procreation, yeah. And you don't even associate yourself with your mother and father. I mean, you look back, who's your mother and father was the most important question one would ask you. From where do you come?
Huxley actually goes out of his way to show that they are nauseated by the idea of parenthood.
Yeah.
Yeah, the population of Brave New World are nauseated.
And what does it sound like today? I mean, parents are encouraged to farm out their parenting to daycare and increasingly to schools. You have like back to school ads running where their parents are celebrating because their kids are going back to school.
Cultural Marxist, and of course, be sure to give them like 20 vaccinations on the way in the front door. I mean, California public school system is just a Brave New World factory.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Well, the best argument against compulsory public school education is what it's become.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
If you don't think there's a conspiracy there, then you really, really have a you have a really strong faith in coincidence.
Right? Yeah, and you're a very poor parent because, I mean, any parent should be able to at least see that there's something wrong, you know, with asking for 66 vaccinations and having the cultural mark. I mean, the California public schools, it's like, E. Michael Jones. I mean, they're just a gay disco. It's just the GBTL culture with disco music and vaccinations. I mean, you know, it's like, it's just, you can't even like, it's almost beyond the capacity to lampoon.
Yeah, and you have these school systems where they're almost like they're just huge centers of multicultural diversity, and there's no identity, and there's complete anarchy. There's no community patriotism there, and it just...
There's nothing. It's just atomized individuals who are learning to just let it go. Just keep calm and carry on. And, you know... that's why it's just useful, you know, whenever they hit you with the multicultural or whatever, these little slogans, is just say, okay, that actually translates as easy to enslave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So divide and conquer. And
yep.
You know, so, well, Joe,
I guess Tim, it's been a real pleasure. And I hope next week we can go into the Irish potato famine genocide, because as I told you earlier, my blood is boiling. So I really hope we can get that information out to the people.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, brother. Thank you so much.
Enjoy your weekend.
Have a great weekend. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.